Welcome back, you guys. Thank you very much for joining me. My name is Swadik Mayanja, and we are on another episode of the Everyday Hero Show, where I bring someone in your life or someone in my life that brings us joy, happiness, and does good things for the community that they're a part of, but does not get the credit that they deserve. Today, we've got another special guest, a good guest, a nursing guest, a guest that means a lot. So this guest, she helps the fellow nursing students out there integrate into becoming actual nurses, good nurses. Her name is Janelle. She and her duo, Ashley, who was not on today, run new Novice is the New Nurse. Janelle, welcome to the show. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. This is indeed long overdue, but I'm very happy that it's happening. This is good things, right? So right from the get, I want to know your backstory before we start talking about what you're doing for everybody else, because we need to spread some love and you need some of that love too. So Janelle, please tell me, where are you from and how did you get into nursing?
Yeah, so I don't have that like major groundbreaking, earth shattering, my life changed because of a nurse story where I became a nurse. I'm actually from the Bronx, and my entire life I had people around me in healthcare, but not necessarily in a professional, like licensed, went to school, have a degree capacity. The people around me, including my mom, they were CNA, certified nursing assistants. And so in that capacity, I was exposed to healthcare. But growing up, I was always told that you're going to be either a doctor or a lawyer. And it's funny, I was just in New York talking to my grandmother about this, because I'm like, I would have made a great lawyer, but you told me that lawyers lie, and so therefore I can't be a lawyer. That's the Caribbean family. And so obviously I sort of defaulted, because, you know, growing up in the Bronx, you know, it's a lower socioeconomic neighborhood. You're not always exposed to the different options and things that you can tap into, you know, constantly in survival mode. No one's honing in on what you're good at. No one's showing you that there's so many ways to do it, because they're just doing what they can do to get through the day. So it was like doctor, lawyer. Obviously, grandma said no lawyer. So doctor was on my mind. And I started at Stony Brook University in Long Island, New York, initially as a bio major, and with the intention of, you know, following a pre-med track to eventually apply to med school. And I remember my junior year, well, I was approaching my junior year, and my counselor, you know, like you have someone that you're assigned to about like what your major is. And she said to me, what is your major? Like, what are you declaring? And, you know, where do you see yourself? And I call it a quarter life crisis. That's what how it felt. I sat in my dorm room and I'm like, what am I doing? Because I really don't want to be a doctor. I'm not passionate about that. I don't want to go through all this schooling. It was mentioned that I could be healthcare administrator. Like, that was the major. I'm like, I don't really think that people make money doing that, because obviously you're from the Bronx. The major goal is to make money. And so my mom mentioned to me nursing, and I thought about it. I looked into it and I'm like, I can survive that. Yeah, sure.
Of course you can. Let's see. Let's do it. Let's jump on in.
So I applied to a school. I called a school back home. Like, so I had to leave the school that I was in, Stony Brook University, and I had to transfer to another school in Westchester County, the College of New Rochelle, which is actually now closing. But I had to apply to that school. My mom made a few phone calls. She knew a few people. And that's when I started my track to becoming a nurse. But I always tell people, it's not why I started. That's not the grand story. It's why I continue to be a nurse every day. Like, that's where the inspiration is. It has nothing to do with like how I got into it, because it just kind of like fell into me. Like, this is what you're gonna do, and that's where we're going with our life right now.
Okay, so
I 18, right? Like, that's so much pressure.
It's a lot of pressure to put on a young kid to say, decide what you're doing for the rest of your life. And I like that answer you just gave me, because I don't hear too many people say that. Everyone has that, oh my goodness, my grandma was hurt, so I was in the hospital and I saw the amazing nurse stories, right? But your story is very realistic. And to be honest, it's probably the right story for the vast majority of nurses out there, right? So tell me, what is it that, what's the passion? What's the reason? Why do you continue to be a nurse? Tell me that.
Yeah. And so that's funny, because that reason continues to evolve as well, right? Because initially I once I got through nursing school, I fell in love with the pediatric population. Mm-hmm. So I grew up with asthma. I spent a lot of time in the hospital, ERs and actual hospitalizations. And that wasn't particularly inspiring for me to say I want to become a nurse, but it wasn't until I saw those kids that I worked with in the Bronx who they looked up to me. They felt like I was relatable. I spoke like them. I looked like them. And I was helping them. And I felt like I was in this position where, you know, because let's be honest, like young Black women, we make up only about like 12% of our entire nursing profession. So even working in the Bronx, you can only imagine in a PICU setting, in a pediatric ICU, there's still not many of us. And so I felt like as a young Black woman relating to this demographic that I grew up around, because I lived 15 minutes from the hospital, I felt like I was in a very unique position. So I began relating to the families. I began relating to my patients. I connected with them and I wanted to help them heal. And I wanted to be that person that understood them, right? So kind of like a social worker, but like using what I learned to heal and to intervene and to be the voice of the mom who she feels something, she's saying something, but maybe she can't articulate it in a way for our team to listen. So I felt like that's where I was like locked in on. Like, and so I fell in love with that. And I loved coming to work every day and I loved working with my patients and I loved working with their families right there in the Bronx.
Okay. I know I said we're going to jump into novices and new nurse, but a little bit more. So did you start out straight from the get in peds? Did you was it med-surg that, how did you get into peds or has it always been peds?
Well, so that's a great question because now that's going to tie into the birth of novices and new nurse. So I actually, I did an externship during nursing school, which I recommend all nursing students to find one because they have them. And that kind of like streamlines you into your first position because that's the goal of it, is to help you, you know, get hands-on experience, enhance your resume. And oftentimes they invite you into a position in the hospital. So it was my nursing externship that led me into my first position. And I'm not, obviously we're not going to see any hospital names, but that first position that I was led into was an adult oncology mixed med-surg unit. And it was difficult to say the least. And not just the patient population, but the nurses were mean and they were nasty. And my preceptor, I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason, right? And so I needed to go through that experience in order to get here where I'm at today. But in that time, I couldn't understand why I would be given a preceptor that was just so harsh. So I don't think that everyone is equipped to teach, right? You need a certain level of patience. You need some empathy, you need compassion. And let's be honest, like our profession is really bogged down. And sometimes a new grad is thrown at you when you weren't ready for it. And so, you know, using, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20. Looking back, I can maybe empathize a little bit with maybe, you know, her frustration feeling like she has her own patient load. And mind you, this is New York where there are no staffing laws. So maybe that was frustrating. And then to throw someone else on to teach, she was awful, like mean. Like I felt like she like, I was always too slow for her. I was a robot with my, it's just like every day was like more wrong. I never knew that I did anything right. And then it's like the energy of the entire unit felt like that. I had no safe zone. So like, that's where I started. I lasted probably about 3 months and I realized like, I didn't even want to do adults anyway. I hate this. And so I applied for a position at the other hospital and that's where I started my PICU career. So I, after those 3 months of my new grad, I hopped right into a new grad residency and I did 10 months of orientation in PICU and yeah. But it was that experience where I started in adult oncology / med surg that showed me that I don't want any other new grad nurse to feel like this. Yes. I don't want them to go through that. And I felt alone, like very isolated. I felt like I was the only one going through that, where everyone was going through it. We were just very silent about it. And I just don't feel like that's a culture that is going to breed the best set of nurses, right? If we all have this like chip on our shoulder, how are we supposed to bring this like healing energy to our patients when we're so like annoyed about what we're doing? So I felt like that was where I needed to you know, have my greatest impact was helping new nurses, but I needed to obviously get my own experience. So that was on the back burner until I felt like I had enough experience in what I'm doing. And I had a real, like, you know, solid foundation. And now I've transitioned to where I'm at now, which is what I'm really passionate about, which is helping new grad nurses all day long.
Can we please just clap it up, girl? Look, so I'm really happy to hear all of that, because there's a lot of bumps and bruises, and there's a lot of things you need to get over as a new nurse, right? And there isn't a person, an organization, a company that's out there that's looking out for the brand new nurse who's confused, who thinks that the first job they get is the culture of all nursing, when absolutely it's not, especially when it's in situations like yours. So yes, novices as a new nurse is most definitely needed, because there's a lot of these things that just happen to us and we're like, oh, I guess this what nursing is. And that leads to burnout real quick. And it's a horrible, horrible situation. But let's back this up, because it sounds to me like you had a lucky break having the externship, right? Yeah. So most people don't have that. Most people don't have that in their schools. And I know I didn't have that, right? So let's talk about, let's get our minds into a senior last semester nursing student, right? Going into this semester, this final semester, the final year, whatever you want to call it, what should a nursing student be prepared to do? What should they be? Where should their mindset be? How do you get them ready from last semester of nursing school to brand new nurse?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And so one amazing thing that I have realized through this whole entire process of, you know, growing novice is that nursing, they didn't really teach us the business aspect of the game. We're walking into a business. The hospital operates like a business, but no one taught us, who we are the foundation of the hospital, how to think like a business, right? And so I think that the one thing that a nursing student should think about in their last semester is that I have to pitch myself to a business. Right? You have to get into a different mindset. It's not Janelle the nurse right now. I'm Janelle the businesswoman, and I want to secure the one position that may be available in this particular hospital on this particular unit for a new grad. So how do I get there? Right? Because if you're applying to residency programs, those are competitive. And if you're not applying to residency programs, then you have the burden of convincing a unit that you're not going to be a liability by slowing them down, by being a new grad and them having to work with you and help them when they're already short-staffed. So either way, you have to position yourself in a way that shows that you are going to be responsible, that you're going to be an asset, that you're ready to take on the challenge and you're ready to move fast and learn and be flexible and adaptable. So ways that you do that is by definitely showing that you have patient care experience, which is why an externship is amazing, because externships, how you operate is that you're shadowing a nurse. And so you're doing things that nurses do, but you're also shadowing a CNA, a PCT. So you're learning what they do as well. And you take on more of the role of a PCT CNA, but they also give you more flexible hours. And everyone's externship, you know, plays out differently. Mine, I had more of a PCT role and shadowed the nurse. So I learned, you know, I was able to put together the concepts from all those semesters before into real life, in a real life environment. But I did that 40 hours a week as opposed to just the 12 hours a week
of clinical.
Yeah. So you'd get to do that through the summer. And if you choose to, sometimes they allow you to stay on as a PCT or a CNA, because after your first semester of nursing school, you in New York anyway, you qualify to become a CNA regardless because of that semester that you went through. And so now you're getting that patient care experience. So now they know that they don't have to teach you the basics of interacting with other people, right? Now you've proven that you are a responsible worker. You're proving that you have, you know, the ability to intervene, to assess, to show, you're showing your skills in real life, in real time, in real life. So now when a manager sees that on your resume, they know that someone else potentially has vouched for you, so they can potentially take that chance on you as well. Volunteering is great.
Yes.
Absolutely. And there's so many ways in which you can volunteer. I think we like to box ourselves in, but like volunteering is like there's vast ways that you can volunteer. Making sure that your GPA is obviously like up there. You don't want to just have like a poor GPA, but it's not, I don't ever want to discourage someone who's graduating with a GPA that's not that competitive. That's why, you know, it's a holistic experience. We're three dimensional. We're not just one dimensional. So it's not just a number on a paper. Maybe you're not a great test taker, but maybe clinically, when you're in a clinical setting, you're great, you know, and I'm the opposite. I'm a great test taker. And clinically, I'm like, people could look at me like, you okay? That's the kind of nursing student that I was. It's like, it took me a while to grasp the clinical experience. So just creating a really multi-dimensional experience for someone to look at when they're looking at you. Create a portfolio, you know, like you're pitching yourself to someone. So you have to make sure that you're thinking with that business mindset.
Yeah, no, so that's amazing advice, right? I've never once heard that. Think of myself as a business, as a business person, business man, business woman going into the nursing profession, right? Because that's literally what you are. A lot of these hospitals look at you as just another number, right? And if you can meet all the boxes, if you help them do what they need to get done, you are hired. If not, too bad. So if you come there with your, oh, I love nursing, you know, it means a lot to me. Oh, we don't care what it means. We want to know what you can do for me. So I love that advice. And it's a hard hit to take when you come from nursing school, but it's a legit, it's needed, it's necessary.
You got to put it all together. Yeah. Yes, I love nursing. I have all these other skills, right? Like I'm compassionate. I feel like I'm empathetic. But a lot of hospitals, when they're interviewing you, once you get over that new grad experience, they want to know about your customer service skills. I will not mention the hospital, but there's a particular hospital in California that when they ask you, when they're interviewing you, it's very much, if you were in conflict with a patient, if you were in conflict with a manager, how do you handle a difficult assignment? Like they want to know, how are you in terms of customer service? How are you in terms of moving fast? Like all of it boils down to the bottom dollar. Like yes. Seriously. So you have to be able to give the best of both worlds, how to be compassionate, how to give that, you know, be a human and not a robot in front of your patient. You know, you want to facilitate their healing. You want them to relate to you, as well as prove to a hospital that while I'm actually being a nurse, I can be an asset to your unit because I respect and understand that this is a business. And I respect and understand that if I'm not an asset, that I'm creating you a loss. And that's problematic at the end of the day. So we have to, that's the burden of nursing. We have to be the best of both worlds. We have to be healers as well as we're a part of a business that we need to understand as well.
Of course, it's part of the game. So this is good, right? So now you have your foot in. Let's all say you guys did your great interview. You finally got in, right? Now you have your foot in the door. You got your first nursing job, right? So talk to me a little bit about what nursing with finesse is. And I think this is part of novice as a new nurse, right? So nursing with finesse. So now they have their first nursing job. How do they take this and expand it to greatness? How do they become the nurse, Mrs. Nightingale? How do they do that?
So Nursing with Finesse is our online mentorship program. And so what it is, it's first and foremost, it's a safe place for new grad nurses, right? It's a place for nurses to understand you're not alone. Your anxiety is real. I respect it. I see it. And I'm going to help you through it. And then once we acknowledge this, then I'm giving you actionable steps that are going to reduce the anxiety. See, we think that anxiety is just all by itself. Like, oh, I'm just anxious because I'm new. No, you're anxious because you're insecure about a set of skills that you may or may not have in comparison to people who are, you know, experienced and have a higher, more advanced degree than you, and you're getting all these words thrown at you and you're like, but what am I supposed to do? So we address your anxiety and acknowledge that it's there and that it's real, and we help you change your mindset. And then we work on the other things, like how you're going to communicate with the physician, how you're going to stay organized, how you're going to map out your day. What are all those other things? How are we going to help you, you know, be the most effective with your time management so that you're not, you know, accruing overtime? How are we going to help make sure that you're continually self-reflecting so that you can improve upon what you need to improve upon before someone has to tell you about it? So all these actionable steps contribute to lessening that anxiety that we've already acknowledged is there. And as a result of your anxiety reducing, you perform better, and then you're more confident, and then you can just take on the world.
Yes.
But nursing nurses.
All right, so I gotta let y'all know out there, all you nursing students, all you brand new nurses, all you nurses in general, Janelle is making it sound too easy. This is hard work, boo-boo. All right, so let me get into the nitty-gritty, because I got a few issues that are like mind-numbing, anxiety-filled situations, especially when you're a new nurse, that I'd like you, Janelle, to talk specifically about, okay? All right, so let's talk about the biggest, the baddest, the most scariest thing that can happen to a nurse. Let's talk about med errors.
Okay.
As a new nurse, what happens, right? You have a medication error. You think it's over. You think you killed the patient. You might have gave two Tylenol instead of once, right? You think you killed the patient. You think you're going to lose your license. What is your advice to new nurses when medication errors happen?
Yeah. Med errors they're scary, right? Yeah. But as professionals, we understand that we're human and so that mistakes can happen. But obviously the way the hospital is set up and the way the systems are set up, it's to reduce human error as best as we can. But once the error has been done, what should you do? First and foremost, what did you give? Like, know what you gave and know what you gave too much of or too little of, or what was the error and what are the possible and potential side effects of that error? Because immediately you want to be assessing your patient, right? If it's an emergency, you yell for help, you press your code bell. If you did something grossly wrong that has a complete fast, quick, adverse effect on your patient immediately, your first and foremost thing is stabilizing the patient. That's our priority always. So if there was a med error, assess your patient first, right? Make sure that your patient is stable. Make sure that vitals are stable. If you gave too much of a blood pressure medication, you need to get that portable vital sign machine over and you need to be assessing that blood pressure every 5 minutes just to make sure that your patient's blood pressure is not bottoming out. The next thing that you do, if you're working with your preceptor, you let your preceptor know. If you're on your own, you want to call the doctor and you want to inform your charge nurse. The one thing that you never do, I don't care if you think you're going to get in trouble. I don't care if you think you're going to lose your job. I don't care if you lose your license. I do not care. Think about if your mother was in that bed. Think about if you were in that bed and someone made a mistake. You have an obligation to your patient and your patient's safety. And so you always want to make sure that they're your priority. So you tell your charge nurse, you inform the doctor. You let the doctor know how much you gave, how little you gave, what you've assessed, the state of the patient, what's currently going on, and allow the team to move from there. Most hospitals will, if there's an adverse effect that we're expecting, the physician will then lead you on to what we should be monitoring, what labs you should be drawing, what you should be doing. If it's a bolus because you bottomed the patient's blood pressure out, the physician will go from there. If it's no adverse effect, let's say the physician ordered 325 milligrams of Tylenol and you gave 650 milligrams on an adult patient that's my size, that's not harm. No harm was done. Was it a mistake? Yes, that's not what was ordered, but no harm was done. So the next thing that after speaking with your charge nurse is more than likely you're going to need to file an incident report.
Uh-oh.
Incident report, but see, no.
Don't, Okay.
No. And see, that's the thing. As a whole, our profession, we have to start moving towards letting people understand that there's a culture around incident reports. They're scary. They make us uncomfortable. They feel punitive. And that's not fair. And we got to stop making people feel like an incident report is punitive, because I've also felt like when someone wants to write an incident report, I've felt like it's like this weight on you. Like, well, damn, like, what did I do? It's not fair to make anyone feel like an incident report is punitive. An incident report is something that we're documenting so that we can learn from it, right? So that we can audit it. What happened here so that it can never happen again? If you're in a hospital that makes you feel like this is trouble for you based on a mistake, then there's deeper than that. We need to talk about why that there's a culture around that. We need to figure out then how many mistakes are y'all having? What are y'all numbers? Because mistakes are the inevitable, and there needs to be some re-education around the goal of an incident report. And maybe too, maybe you need some re-education. And so that's, why you have to let other people know, because you need to figure out, well, why did I give 650 if I was only supposed to give 325? After the whole day is said and done, you have to go home and have some self-reflection. Period, point blank. You need to start asking yourself some questions. Was I not paying attention? Did I not review the order right before I gave it? Did something change too quickly, right? Because how many times do you review order and then, for example, this happens with things that you're not scanning, right? In the ICU, the physician may say verbally, go ahead and start a liter bolus, right? They're going to put the order in, but then when they put the order in, they put it for 500. Then you go to them like, you told me to give a lead, and they're like, oh, I changed my mind. That is a discussion we need to have, because if you verbally spoke to a nurse about giving a lead or bolus in an emergent situation and then you changed your mind, you need to walk back over to me and let me know that, because my priority is not looking at the computer. My priority is stabilizing my patient. So that's why incident reports are important, and that's why you never should hide your mistake, because there needs to be open dialogue about it. Because at the end of the day, our patients are what matters. Always put yourself in the bed. If that were you, y'all better go call that doctor and tell him you did too much with me.
Yes. Okay. Look. So I'm 1,000%. I agree. But Janelle, let's be honest here. I've been a nurse for 3 years, right? I've worked at two facilities, right? But even in nursing school and then at both facilities, I don't think that this is a facility by facility incident reports are bad. I think this is a nursing thing. It is. Like incident reports are scary situations. You only do. And I was going to also ask about patient falls, which is very similar to medication errors. And maybe you can talk a little bit about patient falls too. But when you're writing an incident report, something happened that is not supposed to happen. I get it. I understand that we want to learn, but it is a scary thing. And as a new nurse, and sometimes I still feel like I'm a new nurse, but as a new nurse, it is really scary and kind of shitty to have to write an incident report, right? It just is.
Yeah. But okay, so as nurses, we're leaders, right? And as leaders, we take responsibility and we hold ourselves accountable. And if you do not hold yourself accountable for something that you did, then you're going down a slippery slope of hiding every mistake that you make. It's not cool. You don't realize it until you're in that situation where you're the patient and someone makes a mistake. Have you ever been like, really, have you ever had a family member in the hospital and people are whispering on the side and you're like, I'm a nurse, so don't whisper around me. You tell me what's going on.
Yes, of course.
It's comfortable. So you would trust and you would hope that your nurse and your physician will be taking accountability for their actions and doing the right thing. And let me just say this while we're on it. When you're writing an incident report, there's a way to write an incident report. There's a way to make a note. You do not write and incriminate yourself. It's not, I made a mistake. No. Okay. Because if that went to court, they would slaughter you. No, you state the facts. Nobody cares. Nope. Physician ordered 325 milligrams of Tylenol. 650 milligrams was given. Physician notified. Patient stable. Vital signs stable. Will continue to monitor. That's your note, right? You're not saying, I made a mistake and I was supposed to give 325, but then I saw 650, but then when I went back, too much. You state the facts always. And when in doubt, only state the facts. Okay.
Yo, Mama Dukes was right. I don't know if it was Grandma or Mama Dukes. You're a lawyer through and through, girl.
Yeah. My grandma messed me up. I could have been in law school, but I still can, because you can go to law school to, defend nurses.
Oh, good for you, girl. So I have to say, Janelle, I am. I would love. Yes. So, yes, you are the nurse that we all want. Right. You are the nurse we all want to have taken care of us. Good for you, Janelle. Yes. And this is good. Listen, this is good stuff, y'all. This is good stuff. So let's talk about charting. OK, I want to talk about charting for a little bit here, because we talked about incident reports, and that's when bad things are happening or good things are happening. Just situations are happening. But I want to talk about charting, because I feel like maybe outside of the preceptorship, outside of following a nurse around, I don't think people understand how much charting nurses do, period, right? And the more we rely on technology, the more charting we have to do. And it's just the way that life is going to be, and life is currently. What advice do you have to nurses? Because I find like charting is literally the thing that gets in between me and taking care of the patient. And I complain about it you get upset about it, but charting is a necessity. So what is advice that you give to new nurses about how to take care of their charting, when to do it? Should they do it in the beginning of the shift, at the end of the shift, while they're doing each piece of charting information? Advice, please help us, Janelle.
Yeah, charting is a hot topic because it does feel like a burden, but it only feels like a burden if you're not doing it appropriately. Never wait till the end of your shift to chart. Why? Because the shift is 12 hours. And let me tell you right now, I don't know what happened at 8 o'clock when it's 7 o'clock. I don't know. I don't know what you did. I don't know how much you pottied. I don't know. And potty because I'm pee. I don't know what you urinated. I don't know what your poop looked like. I had a full day. I don't remember. So if you wait to document that you heard crackles at 8 o'clock, I mean, at 7 p.m., when you heard it at 8 a.m., first, I have a million questions because I'm like, if you're just documenting that, did you even inform the physician? Did the physician know if someone else came? What if the rest, you know, respiratory came by, you know, and this respiratory team and they want some updates and they're looking at the charting and they're like, oh, okay, since the last charting, which was last night, the breath sounds were clear, they're going to assume it was clear. Your charting is supposed to trend your patient. It's supposed to tell a complete picture of your patient. And I always recommend that nurses do their charting in real time for important things like vital signs, eyes and nose, pain, obviously med administration must be in real time, right? Because eyes and nose are important. Your eyes and nose are telling you about your patient's perfusion. You must have your eyes and nose in. Your vital signs, you must have your vital signs in. What is your temperature? Like I have to see this and I have to know. But your actual head to toe assessment that you have, there's a method, you know, I'm actually teaching a class next week on this. There's a method to dividing up your day in a way that allows you to chart, right? So people get caught up because they don't want to chart in real time. So when you're in your patient's room, you should try to get as much in the computer as you can. If you have five patients and you try to sit down at one time and chart on all five patients, tell me when you're going to get it done. How are you going to get it done?
There's no way. Forget about it.
Because someone's going to be calling for a bedpan. Someone's going to want water. Someone's going to ask you to help come verify something. Someone's going to say, can you help me turn my patient? Because every time you sit in it, it's like a free-for-all. You must try to document in real time. And there are a few other things that you, like your assessment, you can chart incrementally throughout the day. But do not ever wait until the last second to do things like that. Like, no. Charting has to get done in real time, especially for vitals and eyes and nose and pain. Assessments incrementally throughout the day. I say this thing that you should be pausing. I tell my new nurses, I said it on Instagram, I say it in Nursing with Finesse, you should be pausing every 2 hours. Every 2 hours, you should be stopping and saying to yourself, take 2 to 3 minutes. 2 to 3 minutes ain't gonna kill you. Hide in an empty room and say, what am I supposed to be doing now? What have I done? What haven't I done? That's your time to reset. Because if you're just flying out the door and running, there's no method. There's no strategy. You're going to fail. You're setting yourself up for failure.
So I am going to continue, but very, very important side note here. You mentioned your Instagram, and please, ladies and gentlemen, her Instagram is going to be on the screen the whole time. I am obsessed with your Instagram for one reason and one reason only. Your penmanship, Janelle, is...
I have terrible handwriting, and people seem to tell me that I have great handwriting when they see it. And I'm just like, no, I don't feel like, but thank you.
No. So you'll see some pictures on the screen. And if you listen to the podcast version, definitely go check out her Instagram. But the penmanship, it's just beautiful. And I love how you have it on the note. It looks so pretty. It looks so pretty. I love it. I love it.
The new nurse. That's a part of uplifting everyone's spirits. That's a part of how I'm helping, like, be that. Like, it's like, just imagine me just holding you up as you're going through your day. That's what the purpose of it is. Like, if you want to fall, like, I got you. Like, not gonna fall with me. I'm gonna catch you. That's what the point of it is.
And for the podcast listeners, the Instagram is at novice is the new nurse. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So just go follow. Please go follow. A few more questions about being a new nurse, because these are the things. I think these are the things that personally have been really tough on me, and that's why I'm asking you. So I am being a little selfish for your listeners out there, but I think it does relate to most nurses, right? So delegating and just speaking to other healthcare professionals, right? Your coworkers that are not other nurses. Delegating was super, super tough for me because it just was tough for me. But I also want to speak, and this is probably what I heard from a lot more people, so we can spend a little bit more time on this, but speaking to the doctor, speaking to the PA, speaking to the NP, very scary. You get nervous. You don't know what to say. You forget what to say. Help us out here with the disciplinary interdisciplinary communication.
Yeah. So when you're delegating to your CNA, your PCT, I feel like I am the most qualified when it comes to explaining that because I basically grew my nursing career in the Bronx. So I had to delegate to older Caribbean women. So you can imagine how I felt in my 20s looking at a person that could be my mom or my auntie or my grand aunt and asking them to do something. Terrified. Half the time I wouldn't ask them anything because I'm just like, But how do I open my mouth when I feel like you know more about what's going on than I do?
Exactly.
But then I ran myself into the ground because I never asked for the help that I needed, and I never held those people accountable because I was afraid of them. And so that didn't last too long. And so I learned very quickly that you have to develop a rapport with the people that you have to communicate with, right? If I don't know you, I have no right asking you for anything, right? Hi, I'm Janelle. I'm a new grad nurse on this unit. I'm going to be here now, okay? What's your name? Oh, my God. It's so good to know you. I know that you've been on this unit for, like, 10 years. I know that you know everything. So I'll be asking you for some help time to time. And if you need my help, you let me know, because I would love to be there to help you if I can in any way. You got to develop a rapport. It's an exchange. It's not just do. It's do, and how can I help you do? Because you're on my team, and if you're on my team and I'm the leader of my team, then I have to help you as much as I expect you to help me. It's a reciprocation. It's a flow of energy. So if you see your tech or your PCT or your CNA going into your room to change a diaper, and you're probably not going to be free, because who is ever free? But if you know that you can take 5 seconds to go in there and ask them if they need some help, guess what? When they turn that patient, you can listen to breath sounds better. When they turn that patient, you can look at some, you can look at your patient's bottom to check for any pressure injuries, right? That you use that time to also assess and reassess your patients, as well as you're providing a helping hand. That takes away so much of the drama for delegating, because people respect you when you are helping them as well as asking for their help. So
before you talk about the providers, I just, Janelle, you make me so happy, right? Because yes, of course, of course, as a registered nurse, right? And this was my issue, right? I was thinking way too much about what it said on my badge. It says RN, hers is a CNA, hers is LLPN. It doesn't matter. If you need help from another human being, they're a human being. So say hello, introduce yourself. Let them know that it's a team. It doesn't matter what the task is. Some things I can do, that's why I need to do. But then you ask for help and you say, if you're free, I can do it too. I also wanted to mention that a huge thing that I've noticed, even for not the new nurses out there, some nurses just are afraid to ask for help, period. Just like you said, right? Because they feel like they have to do everything. As a nurse, just like you said, if you just, are you all right? Can I help you? Do you need anything? It changes. I mean, it changes everything for a nurse. And I soak in those moments when other nurses, when CNAs look at me running from one room to the next and say, Q, hold up. I'm here for you. What can I do for you? It changes everything. It changes everything.
Yeah. And no one's going to help you when you're running if you've never helped them when they are running. So also remember that, you know, like sometimes it's not like, oh, I can't give your med, but you know what? I can go give that bath for you real quick. Or I can go put your patient on the bedpan for you real quick. Or you know what? I'm going to empty that Foley and I'm going to put it in the computer for you because I know that you're not going to be able to get in there. Or let me go check and see what that patient's pain is so that you don't have to go in there. So maybe you can go grab the pain meds and then go in and assess for them. It's a team. We all got to work together.
Really is. All right. So providers, now I'm actually nervous. It's morning rounds, right? I have to call because this is an emergency. I'm shaking in my boots because I don't know if I'm going to say the wrong thing. Help, please. Janelle, help us here.
There's a special thing that we all learned in nursing school that still stands today. It's called SBAR.
Yes.
You know why no one gets through SBAR? And it's funny because in Nursing with Finesse, I added an extra letter to that. But you have to be a part of Nursing with Finesse to learn what that letter is. It's SBAIR. SBAIR. It's a SBAIR. And I'm not going to tell you what the I is. But it definitely has helped my new grads grossly when they're calling the physician. But the most important thing why we are not able to effectively execute SBAR is because we're not organized. You don't know your patient. You didn't assess your patient. You didn't pause. You don't know what's going on because you just been running all day. So when you have to call the doctor, you don't know what to say. It's not because you're afraid of speaking to this other human being. It's because this other human being is that much more knowledgeable and you don't have the answers. That's why it's scary. There was this surgeon that I worked with, CT surgeon. He was so intimidating until I figured him out. You know why? Because this is why he was scary, because he always asked me questions that I never had the answer to. And I'm like, why don't I ever have the answer to the questions that he's always asking me the same? And he would always be upset that I didn't have the answer. Duh, he's going to be upset because I'm taking care of his most vulnerable population. Yeah, he's going to be upset, which is going to make me uncomfortable because I feel like I'm supposed to know and I don't know, which I'm supposed to know. You get yourself organized. So when I figured this man out, every time he came, he always asked me the same question. What are your eyes and nose? What's your balance? He wants to know what my fluid balance is. When did your patient last get LASIX? What is your potassium? And I forgot the other thing. But you know what I mean? It's not that hard. Be more organized. And then you'll be able to give an effective SBAR. If you're calling a physician that you didn't assess a patient for, when they're asking you, when did they last get albuterol? You don't know because you didn't look. You don't know because you didn't prepare for the call.
Yes.
What are their breath sounds like? I don't know because I didn't listen.
No, I'm so happy you said it, right? Because like I know us nurses like to tiptoe around the fact that, yeah, these doctors went to school a lot longer. So they are very knowledgeable. And when they do ask questions, they do expect the answers, especially when it's nursing tasks, nursing. It's our job to know these things about the patient. So yes, they are very knowledgeable, but that doesn't mean you're not knowledgeable. That doesn't mean you're not smart. You just need to know what you need to know, right?
Organize yourself. That's it. We know what we know. You need to gather yourself before. Like if I know that I'm approaching someone who is intimidating, I don't run up to them and say hello. No, you take a deep breath. You gather your thoughts. What am I going to be saying? What do I have an inclination that you possibly might be asking? Like, what could you be asking me, right? If I'm telling you that patient's in respiratory distress, you're going to want to know, what are my breath sounds like? You know, are they on any neb treatments? They want to know what you've done. They want to talk to you about that. So anticipate those questions. And a physician's never going to ask you something that's out of your scope. And even if they ask you something that's out of your scope, you let them know, honestly, I'm not sure about that, but I can ask the respiratory therapist. Honestly, I'm not sure about that, but we can page the resident and maybe potentially find out. They're not going to ask you. And if they ask you something out of your scope, you should be that organized to know that it's not in your scope. And it's okay if you don't know, you know, like sometimes the physician will be like, oh, what was the, I don't know, you know, they may ask a question that you may not know. I'm not sure. Hold on. Give me a second. Let me look. It's okay to say, pause, doc. I got to look this up. Pause, doc. Let me call my charge nurse over here who may potentially know. You don't have to feel like you're running and chasing your tail because you're talking to a provider. Don't feel like that. You're a part of the team in the same way that they are a part of the team. And you are one of the most important people on that team. You have all the answers for them to even decide what to do next. So you should feel empowered to do that. You should feel empowered in your position. So just take a deep breath and call on all your resources. Hey, charge, they asking me a question. I don't really know what they asking me. Can I give you the phone? Simple. Open the computer.
Yes. So I know we're running close to your hour here, so I just noticed the time, but this is super important, right? We have to talk about this because this is outside of actual the task of the nursing of a nurse, the day-to-day of a nurse. Let's talk about monies, right? Because money it's important, right? When you come out of nursing school, you're ready to do whatever job they say, like whoever says yes to you, right? Yeah. But let's talk about the money situation. Okay. How do you know if you're getting paid enough? When do you ask for a raise, if you ever ask for a raise? How do you even bring up the topic about money to your manager, to your charge nurse, whoever you have to report to? Help us new nurses when it comes to dealing with money and actually getting paid for the value that we are.
Yeah. So here's the crazy part about nursing, and I will be open to any correction. We don't get individual raises. our salaries are, and this is kind of unfortunate, you know, our salaries are pretty set, and they have, if you accomplish a particular thing, then there's a dollar amount that it can go up by. But it's not like you're walking into a situation and negotiating it. When you're a registered nurse, they know what you're going to start at, and it depends on what type of degree you have. It depends on the type of experience that you have. It depends on the type of certifications that you have. And it depends on if you're going into a union versus non-union. You're not just going to go to your manager and say, you know what? I've been killing it on this unit. I think I deserve $20,000 more this year. It don't work like that. That's not how we get paid. And our salaries also vary by state. It varies by city, you know? Like, when I started nursing in Westchester County, I think my starting salary was like $62,000 a year. When I moved to the Bronx, which is considered part of the five boroughs, NYC, my salary immediately went up to $78,000 for the year. So I think that you have to know your worth. You have to do your research. You have to figure out what type of hospital this is. You know, what are the opportunities for you to be able to advance your salary based on what's given, you know? So if I do get an advanced degree, will I get another dollar? If I get a certification, will I get another dollar? If I move up a clinical ladder and prove to you that I am a leader in this, you know, field, and I am an expert in this field, and I display that with some research and some data, you know, will that give me some more money? But we're not in that. It's unfortunate, but we're not in a profession where we're just going to be negotiating our salaries. But y'all let me know if there's something I don't know about, because that means I need to be negotiating mine, okay?
respect. Janelle, thank you so much for doing this. Before I say goodbye, I have to remind everyone that's listening, A Novice is the New Nurse. Go find her on Instagram. Huge. I love her Instagram. Go to the website, novicesnewnurse.com. And Janelle, before we go, is there anything about new nursing, about nurses that are about to graduate nursing school? We haven't even talked about that summer in between where it's the NCLEX. I don't even know if you want to talk about. Is there anything you want to talk about at all before we say goodbye?
Yeah. I think that summer after you graduate, or, you know, sometimes it's the winter if you graduated in December, whenever you graduate, I think that you should. So I think the natural feeling that we have is to say, oh, I just completed the most difficult thing of my life. I want to take a break and I want to just like go all out and live my life. And I would say no to that. And that's just me personally, you know?
Janelle, let them live, girl.
No, you're not living until you have a job and you pass your NCLEX, and it's just that simple. Then you're going to have the coins to be able to do what you want to do. But that statistically, it shows that the longer you wait to take your NCLEX, the chance of you passing drastically starts dropping. And so you don't want to get out of school mode and go into vacation play mode and then decide to pick up your books 8 months later. And then now you're really just not the same, you know, scholar that you were a couple months ago. So you want to stay in the habit. I say, give yourself a vacation, like a 1 week vacation somewhere or a 1 week staycation, and just say, whew, I finished. I'm proud of myself. I've accomplished something. I hold a degree. Take that time for yourself, decompress, and then get right back into it, because now you have to work towards your license. Now, you know, this is when some people, you know, Ashley's the type of person, she studied for the NCLEX on her own. She took a book, she went through the book, she passed her NCLEX all by herself.
Good That's, to her.
Yeah, she tells me, and I'm just like, wow, like, I could have never been that disciplined. I used Kaplan. Kaplan was very, you know, instrumental in me passing, because it showed me the technique. It explained to me, you know, where I wasn't the strongest in terms of like studies and subjects wise. And so I knew that was what I needed to like focus on. And so I say that after you graduate, take a week or two to decompress and get right back in it. Now you need to be putting your applications in for jobs. Now you need to be looking up what jobs they're looking for in terms of nurse residency. What are the requirements? Start pulling those things together. Now you should be worrying about when are you going to set your NCLEX date, because don't just not set the date. Set the date so that you're working towards something. You have a goal in mind. If there's no date, then today you may wake up and say, oh, I don't feel like studying. No, if I know my test is on July 13th, I'm studying every day because I know that the clock is winding down. So
definitely. I love that just because, I was in the beginning saying that you have to live your life, but I did exactly what you did. Like, when I had the okay to take the test, I said, look for the soonest date possible. And I had to choose the date after that because of personal situation. But yes, I was like, I need to party. I want to let loose, but I'm not a nurse until I get the license, right? Like, that is, you got your degree, great, but you need a license. You need a license.
You just hold a degree. That's it. You can't practice anywhere. You can't do anything with it. You just have it, and it's not going to be any benefit to you unless you get through that next step. So focus. And then when you pass the NCLEX, then do what you need to do. Live your life.
Live your life is right. Wait, I know I said we were almost done, but real quick, because this is an issue and this is something nurses don't talk about, and I feel like you must deal with this a lot. But what do you do, and what is your advice for those nurses, other nursing students that failed the NCLEX the first time? Like, what is your quick advice for those folks? Because that's a rough situation.
It is. And, you know, I always am very transparent and I let people know, like, I don't know what that feels like personally because I'm a great test taker. And so I pass my NCLEX at 75 questions, one and done. So I can't be sympathetic, but I can be empathetic, right? I know what that feels like. And the biggest piece of advice that I would let any new student nurse know, or not even a new graduate, just a student nurse period, is that don't get in your own head about it, right? You failed it and that's okay. And now you need to pick the pieces back up and start again. Give yourself a good cry if you need to. Allow yourself to feel the feelings that you feel. If you're disappointed in yourself, sure. But then pick back up and have an honest conversation with yourself. Why did I fail? How come I failed? Was I not studying consistently? Was I not giving it the right amount of hours in the day? Do I need to have, you know, a professional program like I think a lot of people use Kaplan. They use Hearst. They use UWorld, they use ATI. Do I need to get the help of all these other, you know, more professional organizations to help me? Is it that I scheduled the test too soon? Is it that I got so many questions on this one particular thing that I know that I haven't studied and I'm not that great on? Like, for example, I wasn't strong on mother baby. And my first question on my NCLEX was a mother baby question. And I said, oh my goodness, this is how I'm starting. But you know, if you have to have an honest conversation with yourself after you fail the NCLEX. So yes, feel what you feel, but don't spend too much time sitting in it because we're winners, we're champions. Exactly. And so a fail is a fail if you just let it be that, you know, it's not a fail unless you say, okay, I'm never taking the NCLEX again. I'm not going to be a nurse and I'm done. That is just an obstacle to your goal. So see it for what it is, self-reflect on how come it happened, and then pick yourself up and keep going. Like, that's it. We don't stop. Someone told me, someone did Nursing with Finesse that told me that she failed her NCLEX like 8 times.
Ooh, she needed Nursing with Finesse, girl. Like, good for her, though.
A rational person. Like, when I look at her, I say, you inspire me so much because that couldn't be me because I would have gave up. She knew what she wanted and she went after it. So if there is someone who could have failed that many times and was never discouraged, then there's no excuse for anyone else. If you want something, you work at it. If you, and the reason, you know, it was more of a sort of a language barrier for her as well. But if you want something, you go for it. She is a brilliant nurse. Like that, when I ask like clinical questions so that I can help them start thinking more critically, she answers the questions like this. It was more of a language thing, reading questions that are that advanced, you know, when there's a barrier, but she never gave up. She had a goal and she set her mind to it. And when she hit one obstacle, she said, cool, I'm going to hit another obstacle. I'm going to keep going and going and going and going. If you want it, you're going to work for it. So I have this video, it's like 2 years ago. I said, if you failed your NCLEX once and you discouraged and nursing wasn't for you to begin with, so then that's it. That's it. That's my raw advice. If you failed it once and you're done and you're discouraged, then it wasn't for you because there's so many more obstacles that we have to overcome that if that messed you up, then you just got to reevaluate the whole thing. Pivot. This is what happened. Now let me figure out how to do better at it next time.
Well, you know, I think you need to look into management because, girl, you got the positive vibes. You got positive vibes.
They could never pay me enough.
Well, good. Yeah, like again, like I said, Janelle, please plug away. Let us know where we can find all of your stuff. I know I mentioned your Instagram, but please let us know. Where can we find you? Where can we get a hold of you? Where can we sign up for these courses? Please, please, please.
Yes. So first and foremost, if you go to noviceisthenewnurse.com, and if we're on the podcast, N-O-V-I-C-E is the new nurse.com. We're going through a facelift right now. We're gonna be upgrading our stuff really soon, and I'm really excited about it because I need it to reflect the energy that we're in. But go to noviceisthenewnurse.com. You can book a call on noviceisthenewnurse.com if you just want an hour to go over your particular situation. We do that. You can sign up for our live classes there. There is a webinar link that you can go to on there, and also all information about Nursing with Finesse is on there. You can sign up for the wait list. We're not open all year round. I only open periodically, and you will be one of the first to know when you go sign up for the wait list, as well as Novice is the New Nurse on Instagram and Novice is the New Nurse on Facebook. And there are some exciting things coming on the way, but I don't have any timelines for them because I always say everything in its perfect timing. So just know that when you follow us, there's always going to be some excitement happening.
That's it, girl. That's it. Janelle, thank you so much. And I, please, I know I didn't talk about Ashley. We're not hearing from Ashley, but let Ashley know whatever she's doing behind the scenes, it's working. Because whatever she's doing to help you, she needs to help do to help the rest of us, because it's amazing.
So Ashley actually has a master's in clinical nurse leadership. So a lot of the like structuring of the course and like the breaking down the information and, you know, just we have a lot of acronyms that help, you know, create. It's easier on the brain to digest the information. That's all her genius, as well as, so she's actually going back to school for film. And she's going for to be a director. And so she's completely changing careers, but all the videos that you see, like she is like on me, like, no, that wasn't good energy. No. What are you saying? Talk to them. Like you're talking to me. Like she is like, there is no me. You're not going to get that inspiration. You're not going to get that energy without her. Cause sometimes I get in my own head and I'm like, but maybe, and it's like, no. We're gonna do this again. So definitely, although you guys primarily see me, always know that it's a joint effort. Always know that we're always working behind the scenes. We make all the courses together. We make all the content together. We're constantly recreating, pivoting, redoing, always working behind the scenes to make sure that everything that we're providing is the latest, the greatest, and the most impactful for what the new nurse is experiencing in real time. So like what you're going through in 2019, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, Janelle, I think we might need to do this annually. I'm loving it. I can do this. Oh yes. So thank you so much for coming on. I really, really do appreciate it. You guys, you heard it all. For all of those listening, please go. There's going to be a link no matter where you are. There's going to be a link in the description box. Click it, go to my podcast, get rate it. Give me them 5 stars. And thank you, Janelle. Much love. Catch you later.